Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, it's full steam ahead for traffic on the Suez Canal. Tugs refloated a giant container ship last night. It had been blocking the major trade channel for almost a week. In media reports out today, the Suez Canal Authority chairman said that the backlog of 422 ships could be cleared in 3.5 days. Now, to find out more about what this event means for supply chains around the globe and perhaps what lessons we can learn from the past week, we're joined today by Stephanie Krishnan, and she's a research director at IDC Manufacturing Insights. Stephanie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Rachel. Glad to be here.
Good to have you with us. And it was announced late last night that the Ever Given, the 400-meter long ship that was lodged on the Suez Canal, has now been freed. What are your thoughts on the events that have taken place over the past week?
Well, yes, it's freed. Yay. it is good news. But, you know, it has continued to expose, a number of different issues with supply chains continuing. And I think this is a continuation of what has happened with COVID-19. And, it's our second black swan event in 12 months. And, now we're hearing debates around the upgrading of the canal, the validity of international supply chains, and arguments for increasing stockpiles and safety stock or buffer inventory. I think it goes deeper than that.
And I mean, there has been a lot of talk about alternative routes and alternative plans, as you've mentioned, and upgrading for the canal. And there is one option, isn't there, for rerouting, or that was taken for rerouting vessels, and that's around the Cape of Good Hope. However, I understand this increases the shipping time generally in a range of about 2 to 3 weeks. And I was looking at the United Nations site as well. And in 2020, you and I spoke a lot about diversification. And according to the United Nations site, about 80% of world trade is transported by sea. And just over 10% or around 10% of that is through the Suez. So from your perspective, what are some of the key lessons here from what's taken place in the past week?
Okay, so I think, if the last week and probably the last year has taught us anything, it's we need to reconsider our reliance on price as the central point for negotiation. And the reason that this is important is because it does take us down a path of lean. At IDC, we tend to talk a lot about resilient lean. Instead of looking at price as the point of negotiation, when we do that, there tends to be assumption that the capacity will be available. However, if the inventory or the space, whether it be on a truck or ship or plane, then looking at price only as a negotiation point is going to fail. You're going to need to look at the service aspect of things. The other alternative that's been looked at is stockpiling. And I saw that in some recent press as well. We need to, build up stockpiles to make sure that we're able to have that. But again, if you're coming up against that shortfall and you're looking at restocking, then if there isn't that capacity, then the stock, your attempts at stockpiling will fail. So the call for resilience in supply chains is a valid one. However, for supply chains to build in redundancy, they need to look beyond these sort of things. And what the key driver here would be, looking at that redundancy, which means stockpiling information instead of inventory, right? And so when we look at information, it could be information about alternate suppliers, having agreements in place so that you're able to switch quite rapidly, having information and visibility into capacity of those suppliers, be it their inventory capabilities or their production capabilities or their transportation capabilities, visibility into capability of ports, your suppliers and your transport providers. Can they pivot with you when you need them to? Early on in COVID, we saw examples where companies were using suppliers for automotive that were able to use the hoses that they have to provide parts for ventilation masks. So being able to pivot those sort of capabilities. We look at the ability to have transportation suppliers to be able to switch modes, etc. So looking at that sort of capability that companies have, and then also the ability to act. What sort of do companies have the information, to be able to provide that agility and those insights to their customers so that they're able to act quickly? So I think the key thing is that we need to focus away from inventory. We need to focus away from price. We need to look at capability. We need to look at building in redundancy, and we need to focus on information.
And you mentioned visibility there as well, Stephanie. And there was a recent IDC supply chain survey, and it said that almost 75% of Asia Pacific manufacturers see the lack of supply chain visibility and resiliency as the top gaps that will likely be an issue if not addressed. Why is that?
So when we asked that question, actually, it was about April, May last year. So mm-hmm. You know, most of the thoughts about that, it was COVID, and here we are, another incident. So this Suez Canal incident has given us a further illustration as to why it's problematic. To give you an example, those organizations that had visibility and had access to the information would have been able to see that the incident was happening very rapidly, being able to assess the impact and then put into action possible remedial remedies that were required, such as shipping any urgent inventory via alternate shipping modes, and being able to do that almost immediately. Those who found out later through more manual means would mm-hmm. have probably found those alternate shipping modes unavailable or the alternate sources of inventory unavailable. So in terms of having that lack of supply chain visibility, it takes away the agility for organizations to actually act. And this is really important in today's context, because if we look at, you know, Asia Pacific manufacturers and Asia Pacific region, you know, we do need to innovate a little bit more to meet the service expectations of our customers. We say that we're manufacturers of the world. However, we're losing our cost competitiveness because our own success is driving, you know, wages up. So the ability to service our customers in other parts of the world comes under scrutiny. And if we're opaque in our information provision, and in part of that's because we don't ourselves have access to the information, then we're going to face competition from those that are able to do so. And to date, this has largely come from within. You know, we've seen the electronics sector move from Malaysia to China and then potentially mm-hmm. back to Vietnam. But unless we can provide the service levels demanded, it may only be a matter of time until, you know, US and European markets turn to alternative services and alternate sources, including from within their own borders.
We're speaking with Stephanie Krishnan, Research Director at IDC Manufacturing Insights. And Stephanie, I just want to highlight some of the IDC Futurescape top 10 supply chain predictions for 2021 that you've put together. And I mean, these are fascinating, and these were published before the Suez Canal incident took place. But the top one, I'm just reading the first prediction: by the end of 2021, 60% of all manufacturing supply chains will have invested in the technology and business process necessary for true resiliency, resulting in productivity improvements of 25%. And this really links back to the events that we've seen take place over the last week in terms of tracking, looking at, as you mentioned, resiliency, turnaround, and alternatives. What else from those top 10 predictions would you say are relevant to the events that have taken place over the last week?
Oh, and certainly, you know, that one that you called out obviously is a key one. The other is looking at, you know, our prediction 9, which was 30% by 2023, 30% of Asian enterprises will ship freight using an independent SaaS-enabled marketplace platform. The goal here is improving efficiencies and load matching and reducing shipping costs. But again, this harkens back to the point that I raised about redundancy. You know, organizations are looking to these sort of shipping platforms to try and build in the capability to take on, you know, ad hoc or on-demand capacity when it's needed, and being able to quote those rates very quickly. You know, I've heard complaints from manufacturers and logistics, or manufacturers in particular, of logistics organizations saying, you know, the time to get me a quote over 2 days is past. I need that now. So putting in these sort of capabilities and using, you know, marketplaces to do so is also a really key one. And then also the last one, where we talk about supply chain orchestration control towers. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is not a piece of software. This is a group of connected software where we have insight as to where our supply chain is. And I talked about, you know, having the information visibility to be able to say within minutes, while we have a block or a disruption in our supply mm-hmm. chain, we need to be able to pivot that. And companies are able to do that. Back when we had the Tianjin explosion, within minutes, some freight companies were rebooking alternate, rebooking freight out of there onto planes and taking up all the capacity. So some of the competitors couldn't do it. This sort of thing is already starting to happen, but we're going to see it accelerate over the next couple of years.
Wonderful. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us again today and for sharing all those insights with us.
Great. Thanks, Rachel. Much appreciated.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Stephanie Krishnan, Research Director at IDC Manufacturing Insights, right here on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg.
or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.